This is Catherine Peckett with the U.S. Geological Survey. Welcome to National Pollinator Week. It's been celebrated since 2007 by proclamation of the Secretary of Agriculture and a vote of the U.S. Senate. This podcast today is one in a series of podcasts being brought to you by the North American Pollinator Protection Campaign, of which the U.S. Geological Survey is a partner. Today, I'm talking with Dr. David Inouye, a research scientist with the University of Maryland and the Rocky Mountain Biological Laboratory. Dr. Inouye is also on the board of directors of the National Phenology Network and on the steering committee of the North American Pollinator Protection Campaign. David, thank you for taking time out of your studies to talk with me today about pollinators, plants, and climate change. The first question that I have for you is, why are plants and pollinator interactions receiving increased attention?
One of the reasons is that there's been a striking decline in the introduced European honeybees, and that's been a cause of some concern. Another reason is that there's been an increasing demand, particularly for some crops like almonds grown in California, and so it's become apparent that there aren't enough to satisfy the demand for that kind of crop pollination. Another reason why there's been increasing interest and concern is because we think there's pretty good evidence that a couple of species of bumblebees that are native to North America have gone extinct in the last maybe 3 to 5 years. I think a number of people noticed in their backyard gardens, too, that there aren't as many pollinators as there used to be. And so for all those reasons, there's been growing interest and growing concern about the status of pollinators in North America. There's a number of ideas about why those species may have disappeared and why bumblebees may be declining in other parts of the country as well. And one of the hypotheses has to do with the introduction of diseases that were from bumblebees in Europe. And so that may be one of the causes for the relatively rapid decline in some of the native bumblebees here in North America.
Can you explain what phenology is and why it's important to study, and what your work is revealing about the relationship among pollinators, phenology, and climate change?
Phenology is a science that's relatively old science, is relatively new in terms of people beginning to appreciate its significance. What it is a study of the timing of seasonal events, life cycle events. So this could be, for instance, the first leaf bud opening of a lilac plant, or the first flower blooming of any species, or it could be events related to animals, such as the date on which young are born, or the date on which nest construction begins, or egg laying begins. And all of these important life cycle events could be studied from a phenological perspective, or looking at when they occurred during the year. And that provides a lot of very interesting and useful information. There are some very long-term records of phenology. The oldest one that I'm aware of in the world is a record for the first date of flowering of cherry trees in Kyoto, Japan, and apparently that record is over 900 years long now.
There is this new National Phenology Network, which the U.S. Geological Survey and many other organizations are involved in, and that you're part of the board of directors of that network. How does that network work, and how can studying phenological events help us understand pollinators and issues with pollinators and climate change, or potential issues with pollinators and climate change?
The National Phenology Network is a coalition of some academic ecologists, and we're trying to broaden the scope to include anybody who's interested in phenology, whether they're scientists trained to study something like this, or just interested people who are willing to watch the flowers in their yards or in their neighborhoods and record those observations. So this is a very wide-ranging effort focusing first on plants. It's a growing effort. We're trying to be very inclusive in this, and it's trying to be a very public effort. There's a website that people can go to, usanpn.org, so that's USANPN for National Phenology Network, geologicalsurvey.org, and we're trying to encourage anybody who's willing to help record phenological data to look at that website and learn how to enter the data and make those observations part of a record that scientists can take advantage of in the future. Historically, it's been a lot more interest and a lot easier for people to make observations about plants, because noticing things like the first flower of a particular species is something that people have enjoyed noticing each spring or some point during the year when they see the flowers of a particular species. Not as many people have kept track of animal phenology, including things like butterflies or hummingbirds or bumblebees. Actually, hummingbirds might be a good example of a bird species that people have paid some attention to and have kept some records. When you start looking at butterflies or bumblebees, or in particular some of the small solitary bees, they're maybe hard to notice or hard to identify. We don't have much in the way of information about their phenology. So all of these are indicators, all these phenological events are indicators of the environment, because the environmental cues that both plants and animals use for timing their life history events are things like temperature or day length, and those kinds of environmental variables seem to be changing with the changing climate.
One of the things that I've heard is that there might be mismatches between, say, when a caterpillar emerges and when a bird starts feeding its young. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Historically, there have been correlations of environmental events, such as here in the Rocky Mountains, snow melt is a very important environmental event. And when the snow melts, a very important determinant of when flowering occurs for almost all the plants up here. Very few of them rely on day length for flowering. And some of the pollinators would probably be responding in part to things like when the snow melts and the ground begins to warm up, but other animals may be more responsive to air temperature than to date of snow melt. So if these two different environmental cues, for instance, the date of snow melt and air temperatures, are not synchronized the way they were historically, and we may have an event situation occurring, for instance, that flowering begins, but the pollinator hasn't emerged yet, or vice versa, that the pollinator may come out because it's responding to warming air temperatures in the springtime, but there's still some snow on the ground and the plants haven't come up yet. So if those historically synchronized environmental events begin to diverge in time as a consequence of climate change, then there's a potential for a mismatch between when pollinators are emerging and looking for nectar resources and when plants are available waiting for pollinators. These sorts of loss of synchrony could have cascading effects throughout a whole community.
David, what are you studying in particular?
I've been working here at the Rocky Mountain Biological Laboratory since 1971, and I've been coming back ever since. So this is my 38th year at the lab. And almost every other day for every summer since 1973, I've looked at the timing and the abundance of flowering in these plots. And that means that I've been following now 30 of these 2x2 meter plots, and they encompass, maybe about 90 or close to 100 different species of wildflowers. So this is now one of the longer-term records here for North America. It certainly doesn't come close yet to a 900-year record. This turns out, perhaps providentially, to have been a good time to start such a long-term study, because that meant that I've been able to record some of the changes that seem to be going on as a consequence of climate change, both in terms of the timing of flowering and the abundance of flowering.
Can you discuss that a little bit?
The animal data for the butterflies and arrival dates for hummingbirds and some other phenological observations, like when marmots emerge from hibernation, have come from a friend of mine here at the biological lab named Billy Barr. And Billy started coming here, I think, about 1973. And he fell in love with the place, and he's been living here essentially year-round ever since. Like, we have long winters up here. So Billy spends a lot of time looking at snow all winter long, and I guess out of his own interest, his own curiosity, and he started writing down, when did he see the first marmot emerge in the springtime? When did he see the first butterfly? Or when did he see the first hummingbird? And there's a long tradition of people getting interested in natural history and phenological observations, as Billy did. And one of the efforts of the National Phenology Network is to try and find these people and be able to learn about their records and publicize their records. Billy was very happy to share his observations. So it turns out we have a species of butterfly here that overwinters as an adult, and so some cue, probably related to temperature, triggers them to start flying around. And if the cue that they're using, let's say air temperature, is diverging from the pattern of snowmelt dates, then there's the potential, and actually we have seen this in the data, for the first date of a sighting of the butterfly diverge from the first flowering dates for the plants that I'm watching. There's a tremendous amount of variation, so in terms of these the snowmelt date, and therefore in terms of flowering dates. So we could have flowering start as early as the middle of April now, and we could have it, during the observations that I've made, we've had it happen as late as sometime into June. So, but there has been a trend towards earlier flowering, particularly in the last 10 years. Here's another example of somebody who's interested in natural history, in this case, the natural history of butterflies. And Art Shapiro is an academic ecologist, but he, for 30-something years now, has made a regular survey of I guess how many species, but I think close to 30 or so species of butterflies. And he found that about 23 of the species of butterflies that he's been watching advanced their seasonal activity, and on average by about 24 days. So here's an example of an important group of pollinators that are now active more than 3 weeks earlier than they used to be about 3 decades ago.
So this could have huge implications.
It's one of the things that both academic ecologists and I think the general public have begun to appreciate is that biodiversity provides us with a tremendous amount of what we call ecosystem services. And one of the very important ecosystem services that insects and birds and beetles and flies provide us is this service of free pollination of our garden plants, of our crops. And so that's a tremendous service provided by those pollinators. And so one of the reasons that there's concern about declines in some pollinator populations is because of the potential for loss of that ecosystem service.
Thank you for tuning in. Today's program is a product of the U.S. Geological Survey, a partner of the North American Pollinator Protection Campaign, which is managed by the Pollinator Partnership. For a complete list of all podcasts, plus pollinator-friendly resources, nationwide events, and free products, visit the Pollinator Partnership at pollinator.org. That's pollinator.org. Thank you.